Parts 1. You will hear 6 short, unfinished conversations. Choose the best reply to continue each conversation. Put a circle around the letter of the best reply. You will hear each conversation twice. Number 1.
Good afternoon. Can I help you?
Yes. I'm looking for a gift for my sister. She's going to be 18 next week, so I thought a piece of jewelry would be nice.
Good afternoon. Can I help you?
Yes. I'm looking for a gift for my sister. She's going to be 18 next week, so I thought a piece of jewelry would be nice.
Number two.
I'm sorry to hear that you didn't get the grades to get into university.
I can take my exams again at the local college, but I'm not sure if I want to do that.
Number three.
Is there anything you didn't like about your holiday?
Maybe the weather. London isn't exactly famous for being a hot, sunny place to visit.
Number four.
Should we take the car? It's the quickest way to get to Bristol.
Haven't you heard? There's fog on the motorway, and there are massive jams all the way down.
Number five.
It says here in today's paper that the government is going to offer free dental checks to people over 60.
I'm all for that. Anything that helps people take care of their teeth has to be a good thing.
Number six.
I'm thinking of buying a motorbike now that I've retired.
I really don't think that's a good idea. They're really dangerous.
That is the end of part one. Part 2. You will hear 3 conversations. Listen to the conversation and answer the questions. Put a circle around the letter of the correct answer. You will hear each conversation twice. Look at the questions for conversation 1. Conversation 1.
Anyway, which talks are you planning on seeing?
Definitely the keynote speaker. I saw her present once before at a conference in Los Angeles, which was interesting because we had previously thought she only uploaded her talks onto the internet. When she presented to us, I couldn't believe how normal she seemed in real life, even a little shy, because she seemed to have such a big personality on those videos. And sometimes the content of the lecture got lost a little bit as a result.
Sounds impressive. So she'll be opening the festival on Tuesday. What's her talk about?
It'll be something about new technologies in computer game design.
Oh, perfect timing. I've got the first class of a game design module beginning next Thursday. So it would be good to get prepared for that. For example, I know my study skills aren't as good as they could be. I really should work on those because I'll probably have forgotten everything by the time I go into class. The problem is finding the time for that, and I'm too busy right now to work on them. I've bought the course books for the module already, and I'm definitely going to do some in-depth background reading beforehand. That has to be my priority. Anyway, which talks are you planning on seeing?
Definitely the keynote speaker. I saw her present once before at a conference in Los Angeles, which was interesting because we had previously thought she only uploaded her talks onto the internet. When she presented to us, I couldn't believe how normal she seemed in real life, even a little shy, because she seemed to have such a big personality on those videos. And sometimes the content of the lecture got lost a little bit as a result.
Sounds impressive. So she'll be opening the festival on Tuesday. What's her talk about?
It'll be something about new technologies in computer game design.
Oh, perfect timing. I've got the first class of a game design module beginning next Thursday, so it would be good to get prepared for that. For example, I know my study skills aren't as good as they could be. I really should work on those because I'll probably have forgotten everything by the time I go into class. The problem is finding the time for that, and I'm too busy right now to work on them. I've bought the course books for the module already, and I'm definitely going to do some in-depth background reading beforehand. That has to be my priority.
Conversation 2.
Hi there. I've actually been thinking about our conversation yesterday. You said that the total cost of the package with insurance would be around £2,000.
That's how much our silver package would cost. Our premium package has the same insurance as silver, but on top of that, our removals team men come and pack all your things, put everything into boxes for you.
How much is that?
It would be £2,500 for this job. So, shall we agree on the premium?
No, let's stick with silver. Actually, I've been looking at some reviews of your company online. Generally very good. The thing that seems to impress most people is the cost.
Well, yes, I think most people are surprised by our low prices. Others believe that our level of customer care is the best thing about us. And I've also seen some reviews where people are most impressed by how quickly we complete the job. I agree with everything they say, of course, but I'm probably most proud of our reputation for customer care and satisfaction.
Great. Well, I think that's everything. Oh, one final question. Once I make the booking, will I have to pay more if I need to make any changes?
In most cases, there's nothing extra that you'll need to pay once your initial payment is completed, unless, that is, you decide to cancel the booking completely. In that case, there will be a charge of 10% of the total fee if you cancel less than 15 days before the date of the move. And if you need to move the date for any reason, we'll usually do that for a very low cost.
Fantastic. Great. Well, I think I'm ready to book. Hi there. I've actually been thinking about our conversation yesterday. You said that the total cost of the package with insurance would be around £2,000.
That's how much our silver package would cost. Our premium package has the same insurance as silver, but on top of that, our removals team men come and pack all your things, put everything into boxes for you.
How much is that?
It would be £2,500 for this job. So, shall we agree on the premium?
No, let's stick with silver. Actually, I've been looking at some reviews of your company online. Generally very good. The thing that seems to impress most people is the cost.
Well, yes, I think most people are surprised by our low prices. Others believe that our level of customer care is the best thing about us. And I've also seen some reviews where people are most impressed by how quickly we complete the job. I agree with everything they say, of course, but I'm probably most proud of our reputation for customer care and satisfaction.
Great. Well, I think that's everything. Oh, one final question. Once I make the booking, will I have to pay more if I need to make any changes?
In most cases, there's nothing extra that you'll need to pay once your initial payment is completed, unless, that is, you decide to cancel the booking completely. In that case, there will be a charge of 10% of the total fee if you cancel less than 15 days before the date of the move. And if you need to move the date for any reason, we'll usually do that for a very low cost.
Fantastic. Great. Well, I think I'm ready to book.
Conversation 3.
So, Olga, how did your visit to London go? Did you get to see everything on your list?
Well, on the whole, pretty well, though I didn't get to do everything I wanted.
Did you manage to get into Madame Tussauds this time? I know you didn't last time you were in London.
Oh, yes. No problems with long queues or exhibits being closed this time around. I loved seeing the waxworks of the royal family again. It's scary how lifelike they look. They even recreated the clothes.
Speaking of which, did you get on that tour of Buckingham Palace? I know it was top of your list of places to see.
Oh, yes, I did, and I wasn't disappointed.
My favourite part was the staterooms. They were so impressive. I loved the interior design. There are so many masterpieces there from some of the world's most famous painters.
When I went, they had an exhibition to celebrate the Queen's 90th birthday. It was called Fashioning a Reign, and it showed outfits the Queen has worn from the 1930s right up to the present. After Buckingham Palace, where was next?
Westminster Abbey. I had to see that. So many famous people are buried there. Kings, queens, prime ministers. The list is endless. And let's not forget, Prince William and Kate got married there, like many royals before them.
How about the Tower of London? Now there's a place full of royal history. Think of all the executions that took place there. They say it's a terrifying place.
I wouldn't know. On the day we went there, there was some kind of event going on to do with poppies, red flowers, and we couldn't even get close to the entrance. It felt like the whole of London was there, standing in line.
So, Olga, how did your visit to London go? Did you get to see everything on your list?
Well, on the whole, pretty well, though I didn't get to do everything I wanted.
Did you manage to get into Madame Tussauds this time? I know you didn't last time you were in London.
Oh, yes. No problems with long queues or exhibits being closed this time around. I loved seeing the waxworks of the royal family again. It's scary how lifelike they look. They even recreated the clothes.
Speaking of which, did you get on that tour of Buckingham Palace? I know it was top of your list of places to see.
Oh, yes, I did, and I wasn't disappointed. My favourite part was the staterooms. They were so impressive. I loved the interior design. There are so many masterpieces there from some of the world's most famous painters.
When I went, they had an exhibition to celebrate the Queen's 90th birthday. It was called Fashioning a Reign, and it showed outfits the Queen has worn from the 1930s right up to the present. After Buckingham Palace, where was next?
Westminster Abbey. I had to see that. So many famous people are buried there. Kings, queens, prime ministers. The list is endless. And let's not forget, Prince William and Kate got married there, like many royals before them.
How about the Tower of London? Now there's a place full of royal history. Think of all the executions that took place there. They say it's a terrifying place.
I wouldn't know. On the day we went there, there was some kind of event going on to do with poppies, red flowers, and we couldn't even get close to the entrance. It felt like the whole of London was there, standing in line.
That is the end of part two. Part 3. Listen to the person talking and complete the information on the notepad. Write short answers of 1 to 5 words. You'll hear the person twice.
Good afternoon, everyone. So today's talk is divided into two parts. In the first part, I'm going to try to explain the decision-making process behind choosing what stories to publish in a newspaper. Later, in the second part of my talk, I will explain the process of producing a print newspaper. So first of all, I'd like to consider the question, what is news? It's a question I get asked all the time. Well, to put it in very simple terms, it is anything new. However, that definition is extremely vague and open to interpretation. In other words, it doesn't really help a newspaper editor decide what stories to include. So a better question would be, what factors help newspaper editors decide which stories make it into their newspaper? Well, of course, it's a slightly different process for TV news programmes, because TV editors have to be more selective about what to include. TV news shows are restricted by length and can be as short as 5 minutes. Newspapers don't have these restrictions. But even with print or online newspapers, there are many more stories vying for attention than those that actually appear in the final edition. Returning to the question then, what makes a news story newsworthy? What is it that grabs the attention and makes you want to interact with the story? Basically, it is anything with personal relevance for the reader. This presents us with two more questions. How do we, as newspaper editors, decide what is relevant and what is not? And what is it that makes a story personal? The answer is that it very much depends on your audience, and a good newspaper editor chooses stories based on their relevance and personal interest to their audience. He or she needs to know what sells their newspaper, because at the end of the day, if our newspapers don't sell, we don't have a job. A successful editor doesn't just think about their audience. They also need to keep an eye on the competition. And this is the final factor I want to address in this part of my talk. To clarify, the competition is other newspapers or news channels. If a story is getting a lot of attention and coverage elsewhere, then as an editor, you need to find a way to include it in your newspaper. So now to move on to the process of putting together an edition of a printed newspaper. The first stage is a continuous process in which journalists are collecting and writing up stories and the marketing people are positioning the advertisements, and this is known as the news gathering stage. As soon as an article is finished, it's passed on to the second stage of the process, editing. Both content and language have to be edited. Facts may need to be checked and changes made to the language to ensure the tone of the piece fits the style of the newspaper and the message the editor wants to convey. There may be a number of different editors, depending on the size of the newspaper, and each editor needs to use a contrasting colour to edit so that it's easy to see who has made the changes. For example, sub-editors use red, the chief sub-editor uses blue, and the editor uses green. Once all the editing is finished, we move on to the next stage, which is called pre-press. This stage is concerned with layout. Each page of the newspaper is laid out and designed with stories, pictures, and adverts. A prototype, or first version, of each page is made. Nowadays, these are then transformed into digital form by graphic designers. The pre-press stage is followed by the press or lithographic stage. Traditionally, and in places where digital printing isn't used, the stories and adverts are registered on a plate, an iron sheet, in the size and shape of the newspaper. Next comes the impression stage. The plates are hung on the printing press and the final copies are printed out. For some of the national newspapers, this can run to thousands of copies that need to be collected and put in order before the final stage, circulation, when the newspapers are sent out to be distributed across the country. Although digital technology now plays a part in this whole process, it's actually remarkably similar to the way it has always been done. The process, from beginning to end, typically takes about 12 hours, as it's a very fast-moving business. Good afternoon, everyone. So today's talk is divided into two parts. In the first part, I'm going to try to explain the decision-making process behind choosing what stories to publish in a newspaper. Later, in the second part of my talk, I will explain the process of producing a print newspaper. So first of all, I'd like to consider the question, what is news? It's a question I get asked all the time. Well, to put it in very simple terms, it is anything new. However, that definition is extremely vague and open to interpretation. In other words, it doesn't really help a newspaper editor decide what stories to include. So a better question would be, what factors help newspaper editors decide which stories make it into their newspaper? Well, of course, it's a slightly different process for TV news programmes, because TV editors have to be more selective about what to include. TV news shows are restricted by length and can be as short as 5 minutes. Newspapers don't have these restrictions. But even with print or online newspapers, there are many more stories vying for attention than those that actually appear in the final edition. Returning to the question then, what makes a news story newsworthy? What is it that grabs the attention and makes you want to interact with the story? Basically, it is anything with personal relevance for the reader. This presents us with two more questions. How do we, as newspaper editors, decide what is relevant and what is not? And what is it that makes a story personal? The answer is that it very much depends on your audience, and a good newspaper editor chooses stories based on their relevance and personal interest to their audience. He or she needs to know what sells their newspaper because, at the end of the day, if our newspapers don't sell, we don't have a job. A successful editor doesn't just think about their audience. They also need to keep an eye on the competition, and this is the final factor I want to address in this part of my talk. To clarify, the competition is other newspapers or news channels. If a story is getting a lot of attention and coverage elsewhere, then, as an editor, you need to find a way to include it in your newspaper. So now to move on to the process of putting together an edition of a printed newspaper. The first stage is a continuous process in which journalists are collecting and writing up stories and the marketing people are positioning the advertisements, and this is known as the news gathering stage. As soon as an article is finished, it's passed on to the second stage of the process, editing. Both content and language have to be edited. Facts may need to be checked and changes made to the language to ensure the tone of the piece fits the style of the newspaper and the message the editor wants to convey. There may be a number of different editors, depending on the size of the newspaper, and each editor needs to use a contrasting colour to edit so that it's easy to see who has made the changes. For example, sub-editors use red, the chief sub-editor uses blue, and the editor uses green. Once all the editing is finished, we move on to the next stage, which is called pre-press. This stage is concerned with layout. Each page of the newspaper is laid out and designed with stories, pictures, and adverts. A prototype, or first version, of each page is made. Nowadays, these are then transformed into digital form by graphic designers. The pre-press stage is followed by the press or lithographic stage. Traditionally, and in places where digital printing isn't used, the stories and adverts are registered on a plate, an iron sheet, in the size and shape of the newspaper. Next comes the impression stage. The plates are hung on the printing press and the final copies are printed out. For some of the national newspapers, this can run to thousands of copies that need to be collected and put in order before the final stage, circulation, when the newspapers are sent out to be distributed across the country. Although digital technology now plays a part in this whole process, it's actually remarkably similar to the way it has always been done. The process, from beginning to end, typically takes about 12 hours, as it's a very fast-moving business.
That is the end of part 3. Part 4. Part 4. Listen to the conversation and answer the questions. Put a circle round the letter of the correct answer. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Tanya. Thanks for coming to see me. I'm very interested to hear what you thought about the Science and Technology Festival.
Well, we're both very pleased we went.
Glad to hear it. Was there anything you both found especially useful?
Yes, definitely. I saw at least two lectures that directly relate to the subjects I'm studying in this first semester. I already feel a little more prepared than I did last week.
There wasn't anything that had the same effect on me, but that wasn't my only focus. I saw the festival as a chance to explore new ideas and other subject areas, so I also tried to attend some lectures that looked interesting rather than just the ones I thought would only be relevant to my course.
I'm glad I didn't do that. I get too stressed when I don't concentrate on one thing. But wasn't it great to be able to wander around the university and get a better idea of where everything is?
Well, I certainly feel more confident now I've explored the area a bit more. And I also found it very easy to meet people who share the same interests as me. When I was waiting for some of the lectures to start, I just got talking to whoever was sitting next to me.
I was too busy going through my notes to do that. I have to say, going to so many lectures in a short space of time has really helped me to improve one area of study, my note-taking technique.
I wasn't so sure about that originally, but looking at my notes again this morning, I could see how they got better as the week went on.
I'm glad the week was of use to you. It seems to change focus annually. Sometimes the emphasis is more on science, sometimes on technology, but there was an excellent balance this time. It really brings these areas of study and research to the attention of the wider world, and for me, that's the primary reason the festival exists. You may have noticed when you were there that there were a number of university information stands set up around the campus. Did you see the free reference booklets that they were giving out?
No. I assumed the stands were there to provide people with directions to each talk.
Well, their aim was to encourage everyone to read some of the latest studies coming out of our labs and classrooms. Many of the lecturers at the festival actually wrote the studies that were listed. So the talk and the booklets together are a great introduction to their work for anyone who attended. but the staff were certainly happy to point people in the right direction if it was needed.
I have to admit, it was quite confusing trying to follow some of the signs around the campus telling us where to go. So we used the map and the festival guidebook to find our way around. It was great for that. And although one or two of the talks actually started at different times to what was printed on the page, one other thing I did like about the guidebook was that it wasn't full of adverts.
Oh, I agree. But that's always the case with festivals now. I don't mind that if it means that the festival is free to enter, as more and more of them are these days. And even if there is a fee for admission, the festival organisers hardly make any money from that, though they do tend to put the price of entry up each year. They have to make money to run the festival somehow, so it makes sense to get the majority of that through ads.
That's a fair point.
So what next? Do you still want to write something for the department website?
Oh, definitely. Can you give us some advice on how we do that?
Well, it's a simple process, but it can mean a lot of work. First, you need to make sure that you have fully discussed and compiled the notes you made during the festival. For the next step, I would recommend selecting a set number of principal theories that generate the most ideas and summarise those. 4 is probably the ideal number. Then you'll need to go to the website and go through what people have written before. These posts will help you to understand which style seems most appropriate. How academic in tone you need to be, or how informal, and so on. And as this is going to be a joint project, it's really important to make sure that you both come to a joint decision about the best way to divide up the workload. Believe me, arguments can happen. Further to that, you should also agree on exactly when you're aiming to publish it, so establish a deadline. Make sure you don't go past the agreed date, as it will become more difficult to finish if you do. Then, after all this is completed, you're ready to upload your summary and any other documents and post them onto the department website.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Professor Dickens. Hopefully we can come back to you if we need any more help.
Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Tanya.
Thanks for coming to see me. I'm very interested to hear what you thought about the Science and Technology Festival.
Well, we're both very pleased we went.
Glad to hear it. Was there anything you both found especially useful?
Yes, definitely. I saw at least 2 lectures that directly relate to the subjects I'm studying in this first semester. I already feel a little more prepared than I did last week.
There wasn't anything that had the same effect on me, but that wasn't my only focus. I saw the festival as a chance to explore new ideas and other subject areas, so I also tried to attend some lectures that looked interesting rather than just the ones I thought would only be relevant to my course.
I'm glad I didn't do that. I get too stressed when I don't concentrate on one thing. But wasn't it great to be able to wander around the university and get a better idea of where everything is?
Well, I certainly feel more confident now I've explored the area a bit more. And I also found it very easy to meet people who share the same interests as me. When I was waiting for some of the lectures to start, I just got talking to whoever was sitting next to me.
I was too busy going through my notes to do that. I have to say, going to so many lectures in a short space of time has really helped me to improve one area of study, my note-taking technique.
I wasn't so sure about that originally, but looking at my notes again this morning, I could see how they got better as the week went on.
I'm glad the week was of use to you. It seems to change focus annually. Sometimes the emphasis is more on science, sometimes on technology, but there was an excellent balance this time. It really brings these areas of study and research to the attention of the wider world, and for me, that's the primary reason the festival exists. You may have noticed when you were there that there were a number of university information stands set up around the campus. Did you see the free reference booklets that they were giving out?
No. I assumed the stands were there to provide people with directions to each talk.
Well, their aim was to encourage everyone to read some of the latest studies coming out of our labs and classrooms. Many of the lecturers at the festival actually wrote the studies that were listed. So the talk and the booklets together are a great introduction to their work for anyone who attended. But the staff were certainly happy to point people in the right direction if it was needed.
I have to admit, it was quite confusing trying to follow some of the signs around the campus telling us where to go. So we used the map and the festival guidebook to find our way around. It was great for that. And although one or two of the talks actually started at different times to what was printed on the page, one other thing I did like about the guidebook was that it wasn't full of adverts.
Oh, I agree. But that's always the case with festivals now. I don't mind that if it means that the festival is free to enter, as more and more of them are these days. And even if there is a fee for admission, the festival organisers hardly make any money from that, though they do tend to put the price of entry up each year. They have to make money to run the festival somehow, so it makes sense to get the majority of that through ads.
It's a fair point.
So what next? Do you still want to write something for the department website?
Oh, definitely. Can you give us some advice on how we do that?
Well, it's a simple process, but it can mean a lot of work. First, you need to make sure that you have fully discussed and compiled the notes you made during the festival. For the next step, I would recommend selecting a set number of principal theories that generate the most ideas and summarise those. 4 is probably the ideal number. Then you'll need to go to the website and go through what people have written before. These posts will help you to understand which style seems most appropriate. How academic in tone you need to be, or how informal, and so on. And as this is going to be a joint project, it's really important to make sure that you both come to a joint decision about the best way to divide up the workload. Believe me, arguments can happen. Further to that, you should also agree on exactly when you're aiming to publish it, so establish a deadline. Make sure you don't go past the agreed date, as it will become more difficult to finish if you do. Then, after all this is completed, you're ready to upload your summary and any other documents and post them onto the department website.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Professor Dickens. Hopefully we can come back to you if we need any more help.
That is the end of Part 4.